Welcome, everyone, to episode 394 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and last time we covered which teams slow starts to get nervous about. So today we're going to do the inverse. We're going to talk about teams that have gotten off to surprisingly hot starts and which ones you should buy or sell. Before we get into that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We are being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And we are recording our show today on Locker Room, the only live audio social network for sports fans. Listen to our show on Locker Room before it hits your iTunes feed, engage with us in real time, or start your own room to react to the draft, trade news, and more. Take the mic and download Locker Room in the Apple App Store. Joining me today, as always, is a guy who presumably didn't try to overthrow his government this week, Morten Jensen. How's it going?
Well, I can't go too deep into that. I tried, but...
your security is better than ours? Is that what you're saying?
No, I think we're just smarter people.
Yeah. Either or.
Yeah. Look, I could go on a 15-minute rant about what happened, but you know what? I think it just needs to be left unsaid because everything, like, it's so logical at this point. It's just so dumb, and it's so horrifying, and it's just, yeah.
I just think my favorite part is that idea. Like, I know your resolution this year is to not follow U.S. news as much, which is very smart of you. And I DM'd you early Wednesday after the Georgia races, and I was like, Mort, you can follow U.S. news for a change. And then I remembered what was going to happen later that day. Not that I could have predicted the extent, but I was just like, something bad's going to happen today. I went, wait, maybe don't do that. Then I was completely wrong. Thank God I didn't tweet that, you know, publicly or old takes exposed would have had a field day with me.
Oh, absolutely. And by the way, let me just say that the guy who had, like, the Viking horn hat on, he does not represent where I come from. He is not a Viking.
No, he is a apparently a staunch, like, a prominent member of QAnon, which is great all around. Mort, before we get rolling here, again, just wanted to remind everyone we are being supported this month by Manscaped. So use the code NBAPOD at manscaped.com and you get 20% off and free shipping. That is 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use the code NBAPOD. Your balls will thank you.
And they also ship to Denmark.
That is true. I actually got my package from Manscaped on Tuesday. I got my ball deodorant. So, yeah, I'm smelling minty fresh all around
nice.
Now. Yeah.
Nice. I didn't know you spend a lot of time sniffing your own balls, but I'm glad that you do. My dog does.
My dog does, and he's been much more receptive to it this week than usual.
Hopefully his own balls, not your balls.
No. He goes all over. He doesn't discriminate in this household. All right, so Mort, we have some very surprising teams to talk about today. Let's start with the Orlando Magic for both a good note, because they are 6-2, which is wonderful. They are currently second in the Eastern Conference. They have two wins over Cleveland, who have been surprisingly frisky this year, two wins over Washington, whatever, win over OKC, whatever, beat Miami. Their losses came against Philly and OKC. On the very, very downside, Markelle Fultz tore his ACL. I believe this was Wednesday night. They were playing the Cavs, and he went for a drive early on and just planted wrong. And, you know, he went down in a heap, and you could tell based on his reaction that something was severely wrong. Which just sucks. So he's obviously out for the year, and best wishes to him, you know, given all he's gone through since he joined the NBA. I just want to see this kid, like, get his career off. You know, he really seemed like he was finding his footing, and he was off to a great start this year, and it just, It's a huge bummer. But more, we have to analyze what it means for the Magic moving forward, because MCW is also banged up. So right now, your Cole Anthony dream, it's sink or swim time for Cole Anthony.
It is, and shooting-wise, it hasn't gone well for him. He's shooting 30% from the field, 19% from three. That's concerning. No, but I have to assume he just gets a much larger role. I mean, who else do they have to put into that starting lineup, really, at point guard?
I mean, they don't have anyone. When Fultz went down, I think Anthony played definitely north of 30 minutes in that game. So, yeah, I mean, I think he has to start by default, basically.
Right.
But do you, like, how much are they going to miss Fultz this year? Do you think they need to go get another point guard, whether sign one off the streets or trade for one in the next few weeks or months?
Well, it depends on how he performs. I would like to just give him some time. So, yeah, I think you're headed there in a couple of weeks, maybe a month. I would like to see what Anthony can do over an extended period of time in the starting unit. If he completely falls through, hits the rookie wall, or is just not that effective here in his first season, yes, I would think so. When you have this type of start and you're the Orlando Magic, yeah, you kind of need to capitalize on it in some capacity. Let's not forget, Evan Fournier has already missed three games. Terrence Ross, their second leading scorer, has missed a game as well. So they have had some missed games already, and yet they're 6-2. That could indicate that they're going to going into a season here now where they are going to be playing above expectations. And if that's the case, they absolutely cannot afford having a weak point guard. Not saying that Cole Anthony is, but he could turn out to be a rookie, and most rookies just aren't good. And in that case, they will need to figure something out. But that said, give him some time to see what you can do. And maybe not a month when I really think about it. Like, give him a week and then see. You can get a lot of indication on something over the course of a week.
Yeah, and I think it's fair, even if we're not saying Cole Anthony, even if he performs well, which I hope he does because he has shown some positive flashes despite those shooting splits, it's fair to say their point guard depth chart took a big hit here with Fultz being out. So, yeah, I think ultimately they probably do need one more ball handler just to stay afloat. God forbid any of these guys, Cole Anthony or MCW, miss extended time. I don't know where you're – I guess Aaron Gordon. We'll finally get to see point Aaron Gordon because that's basically their only option.
Will we, though?
I don't know. I'm getting nervous. We have both had our flags planted on Aaron Gordon Island for a long time, and I'm starting to load up the rowboat.
I am too. And the thing is, I still think he would do well elsewhere. Also, to his credit, when you look at his season this year on a per minute scale, he's played so much better. You can also see he's just more active. The concern that I have is, if he's playing that well, why isn't he getting more minutes? Why isn't he getting more touches? That is the concern I have. Why aren't you capitalizing on the fact that right now, statistically, he's actually having a career year?
Part of it, I think, is no Magic player is playing a ton of minutes. This looks like the Milwaukee Bucks minutes distribution last year. Nikola Vucevic leads the team at 31.4. Right. Terrence Ross is second at 28.0. So maybe it's just a strategic thing from the Magic early in the season.
25 minutes, though? That's 1 minute more than one half. That is not a lot. And I think, ultimately, you still need to have a unit that's cohesive and have the necessary chemistry. They're off to a good start. That's great. I'm not taking anything away from that. But that the season progresses and fatigue starts to set in and all of that, you need to have a rotation that you can rely on somewhere with the people who just click. If it's by committee all the time and you have currently, let me just look, 11. Oh, well, one guy's only played. So, 11 guys who plays over 15 minutes per game. That's very European, and I can appreciate that to some extent. But I do think you need to have a lineup where you just roll out your best guys and you can play them for a ton of minutes. I'm not saying go Tibbs all the way through the season, but like have a lineup that's a little tipsy. That's fine.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, I think some early season blowouts both ways may be skewing this a little bit. Like, they got annihilated by Philly, and then they blasted Cleveland on Monday. So
Cleveland is banged up as well, so.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, I think that probably contributed to some of these, like, low minutes. But, looking at that Miami game, the first game of the season, a game that was pretty close, like, they needed to actually mount aid. They outscored Miami by 10 in the fourth quarter, won by 6. Aaron Gordon still only played 26 minutes. So, again, maybe this is just a strategic thing from Orlando, whether it's going to stay the whole season or whether it's just, you know, we have a shortened training camp, shortened preseason. We're just easing our guys in. We don't want to be Tibbs and play people 40 minutes a game. Understandably so. Right.
Mo Bamba probably deserves more than 4 minutes, right?
Right. Yeah, yeah. Well, he's working his way back from COVID, though, right?
Oh, that's the thing. Full disclosure, I just cannot remember every NBA player that's had COVID. Was he one of them?
I thought not only was he one of them, that he had a pretty rough go of it.
Oh.
So,
Okay. In that case, I totally get it. Yeah.
Yeah. And Ken Birch has been playing well as their backup big anyway. But on a positive note, Terrence Ross has been on fire to start the year. 20.7 points a game in only 28 minutes. He's shooting 46.7% from three on 6.4 attempts per game. I don't think that level of shooting is sustainable, but do you think this version of Terrence Ross, like, is this a legit sixth man of the year candidate, your favorite award?
So he's actually a guy that I would make an exception for in terms of rookie of the year, because he's not just a scorer. Like, he's actually a pretty decent on-ball defender. He's not a guy that's just a black hole offensively and just does his thing and doesn't care about defense. Like, he is actually trying to be a guy who participates defensively while also being a shot maker. Right now, yeah, he's absolutely a candidate. Absolutely. 21 points a game, 1.6 steals. He's efficient as all hell. And again, he's participating defensively, which is the most important thing that you can do as a sixth man, in my opinion. Yeah. I would be insane if I argued otherwise.
I'm just glad I could get you to talk about Sixth Man of the Year for a minute. I feel accomplished. I don't have to do anything else today. So, Mort, with Fultz out, with Ross probably coming back to Earth at some point, but maybe not, and maybe Aaron Gordon plays more minutes and helps overcome any regression to the mean for Terrence Ross, do you think Orlando deserves to be mentioned as one of the solid playoff locks now? Or, like, has this hot start changed your perception of the Magic as, you know, we thought they'd be a play-in tournament caliber team, but right. I don't think either one of us had them in the top six of the East. Do you think they are now?
I would say it's closer now, yes, because of their hot start. But again, we'll see what happens, you know, because of the Fultz loss. Because that, like you said, that's a huge loss. Even though he's not a shooter, Fultz kept putting so much pressure on it, opposing defenses, and that has a ripple effect. So who's going to take over that role now?
I don't know. That's right. it's a huge, huge bummer, both for Fultz and the Magic as a whole. Again, you look at the quality of their wins here. I don't buy this team, especially with Fultz gone. As you know, I think they'll probably be 7 or 8 seed.
Yeah,
but I don't think they're going to be solidly in the playoffs. I think they're going to be in that play-in tournament.
So I'm at that point where nothing would shock me. It would shock me if they kept their current winning ratio, but I wouldn't be shocked if they were a top six team. It also wouldn't shock me if they were the eighth seed. Also wouldn't shock me if they missed the playoffs entirely. It's still super early, and I get that they've because of the shortened season, once again, they've already played over 10% of their games, so mm-hmm. that's not insignificant. That said, you know, I'm not sold on them entirely as of yet. They still lack that go-to guy, that superstar that they just have not had for a while now. And yeah. I wonder, and this is what, I mean, I'm coming back to this whole thing, like during certain nights where you're a little bit fatigued, who do you go to? Like, there are certain games once in a while where most of the team is just checked out. That happens to every squad in the NBA. And one guy has to go, you know what? Fine. I can sense that this is not going where it needs to be, so I need to take on more of a role.
Mm-hmm.
Is that Terrence Ross? Because if so,
right, right. Well, Mort, since you brought up Tibbs, let's go to probably the biggest surprise of the season so far, the 5-3 New York Knicks. And this is not a Knicks team that's fattened up on wins against bad teams. Like, it's not like they've beaten Detroit twice and the Townsless Timberwolves. They, you know, they got annihilated their first two games against Indiana and Philly, and it seemed like, okay, same old Knicks. Then they beat Milwaukee by 20 on the second game of back-to-back, and you're like, huh, that's interesting. They beat Cleveland two nights later. They lose to Toronto. They have since won three straight on the road at Indiana, on the road at Atlanta, and home against Utah. Those are all three good wins. Like, really, all five of their wins are legit. What do you think of this Knicks team?
Man, so here's the thing. When you hire Tom Thibodeau, you know that you're going to get wins because he is that dude. And I understand that there are concerns about minute distribution, that there are concerns about him not having, let's just say, an expanded offensive repertoire.
Mm-hmm.
But the dude just flat out gets you wins. He finds a way to just squeeze out wins consistently. And Julius Randle has been one of those engines that he's just been running all the time. Like, almost playing almost 39 minutes a game. Definitely Tipsian. But look, we're talking about a Julius Randle who's now averaging 23 points, 12 rebounds, and 7.5 assists per game. It's like, good Lord. This is like he's found a way to optimize the Julius Randle that we saw a few years ago on the back end of his career with the Lakers, where we said, oh, this guy could be like one of those all-around players if everything like works out. Mm-hmm. And so far, Tibbs has seemed to be working it out. Like, is Julius Randle a superstar? No. But he is providing a ton of necessary parameters. And then he's getting help from R.J. Barrett in his second season. Barrett is still just such a ghastly shooter, but he's at least a big, versatile wing who can get into the teeth of the defense. He can play make. Sometimes he'll actually look passable as a defender. And Mitchell Robinson is, I guess, you know, he's playing a little bit of a lesser role, I think, than I anticipated, but it seems to be working out. I'm pretty impressed. And they've done this with Alec Burks missing five games.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't even... And Obi Toppin, by the way. Obi Toppin played like one game, and then he was injured. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I'm just impressed. Like, if they can pull off these wins with so many guys out, like, hell, Emmanuel Quickley only played four games as well, then it's pretty encouraging. And I'm pretty glad you and I actually gave the Knicks props this summer. This offseason.
Right.
Like, I'll continue to do that. By standing pat, more or less. Like, they didn't mm-hmm. really make huge alterations to the roster. And most people on Twitter were like, oh, this is going to be the same sad-ass Knicks. Like, it was a good sign that they didn't panic and go out and sign, like, 16 million power forwards.
Mm-hmm.
It's working out. Things are coming up Milhouse form, at least relatively so.
Yeah, Michael Perry in our locker room chat has declared that Julius Randle is the GOAT. And honestly, based on his early season statistics, it's hard to disagree. I mean, I know our buddy Dan Favalli of the Hardwood Knox podcast is dying inside because He had some very spicy Julius Randle takes heading into the season that are aging like milk right now. But yeah, Randle's looked really good. RJ Barrett, again, like both of these guys are playing way too many minutes at 38.6 and 38.1, which is exactly what you'd expect out of Tibbs. And, you know, that Barrett got me nervous because I watched him closely in that Sixers game and Ben Simmons just wrecked his life that entire game.
Yeah.
But he's looked really good otherwise. Whenever he's not being defended by Ben Simmons, I know he's shooting 38.8 from the field, 21.6 from three. So that's not ideal. Obviously, yeah. You're going to hope that bumps up quickly.
I don't really see what Dan has a problem with, though, because but when you look at Frankie Smokes, he's hitting almost 56% from three.
Yeah, I know.
Which is the only silver lining for Frankie Smokes' season, but okay.
Yeah, Dan would like to see Frankie Smokes and Julius Randle's minutes flipped, I think.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, it's been a very positive sign for the Knicks so far. As you said, with, you know, Burks and Rivers, both those guys put up big numbers when they're healthy, but they're both in and out of the lineup so far. Elfrid Payton's been playing well, too.
Yeah.
I mean, he actually was their best point guard last year as well, but it's good to see him really kind of finding his footing as the lead guard here and having a playmaking big like Randle to take some of that creation load off certainly helps. What do you think about Quickly? I mean, it sounds like Knicks Twitter is just ready to anoint him as the next big thing.
No, I love him. I love him. I was really high on him coming in as well. He's such a quick twitch shooter, a guy who can just get up 3-point shots in a hurry, but it's doing so by always having like his elbow and like his shoulder square to the basket, so he can come off screens and he can do like he can hit off of spot ups, and like I just love his shooting versatility and the flexibility that he has moving forward in terms of being able to stretch the court, because much like, you know, the Sixers, as you know, the Knicks just constantly lacked spacing. They didn't really have reliable shooters. You can see what a guy like Seth Curry has done for Philly this year. Quickly is not that, not yet. He's a 21-year-old rookie, but down the line he could become a similar type of player. Like I think it's difficult to basically say you're the next Seth Curry, because that's a pretty huge compliment at this point, but there is a pathway towards being that. Absolutely. I love to watch him play.
Yeah, I think you're spot on there. I mean, the Knicks, even this season, with Quickly, with Burks, with Rivers, with Reggie Bullock, who has not been shooting well from three yet this year, they are dead last in terms of three-point attempt rate, in terms of three-point attempts, and they're third to last in made threes per game. Yeah. So spacing definitely remains a concern for this team, but honestly, I think that makes their start to the season even more impressive, that despite that limitation, they are still 5-3 with good, like, multiple wins against good teams here.
Yeah. I do have a question for you.
Yeah.
Kevin Knox, right?
Yep. Is that it? That's the whole question?
Pretty much. Like, what a... Yeah. You know what? I should think it might be. What are we going to do here?
I don't want to say the ship has sailed on him, because he's, what, 21 still? 22? He just turned 21 in August. Yeah. So there's still time for him. Like, I don't want to give up on a kid that young, especially given the spacing concerns here and given, you know, some of his competition. Like, with Julius Randle playing 39 minutes a game, it's hard to get Kevin Knox into that 30-minute range. And with Obi Toppin and Nerlens Noel and Mitchell Robinson as well, like, it's a crowded front court already. But yes, I think it's fair to wonder if Julius Randle is going to continue to play this well. You know, I'm going to guess he's cementing himself as maybe more of a fixture in the Knicks' future than we might have thought heading into this year. In which case, that begs the question, where does Kevin Knox fit on this team? So Would it surprise me if they decide to move on from him at the trade deadline this year in the offseason? No. Do I think he has a ton of value? Probably not in terms of like.
Oh, you're like, being so kind right now.
Are they going to call up the Rockets and say, we want James Harden and we're going to trade Kevin Knox as our centerpiece? And are the Rockets not going to hang up immediately? No, they're going to laugh and then hang up. But like, if they do decide to consolidate some of this young talent in that type of a trade, you know, I think Kevin Knox is like that flyer type where he's not a Michael Porter Jr. mystery box lottery. Like, you know, we think he has MVP caliber upside, but I don't know. Some other team could talk themselves into saying like, Kevin Knox has been in a dysfunctional situation for the last few years. Let's get him in our development program and see if he can, you know, hit his stride here.
Yeah, because I think I might have a destination where he could become a sustainable starter. I might have the fix for him.
The Spurs?
Yeah.
It's just always the Spurs.
No, but look, yeah, usually we mention the Spurs for international players.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the type of guy who is very fluid in his movement. And to be fair, like, his shot release is actually pretty good. Like, there's nothing fundamentally wrong with the way that he shoots or dribbles. Like, if you catch my drift, when you watch him play, it's not as if he just stands out as having poor mechanics and not being able to handle the basketball. Even his passing on occasion is actually like, oh, okay, he can make a certain pass that I might not figure that he could. I think there's something there. Now, granted, do I think something there means that he's going to justify getting picked ninth overall? No. I think that ship has probably sailed. But, you know, we're talking about a guy who might be out of the league in a couple of years right now if the current trajectory keeps up. And I think you can scale back on that at least. I think if he goes to a place with the Spurs where there's a lot of discipline and where he also doesn't have a past, like, because there's finally discipline in New York now because of tips, and that's great. But I also think sometimes if you've been with an NBA organization for a while and it's just been very tumultuous, sometimes depending on who you are as a person, you probably need to just a fresh start somewhere else. Even if someone comes into the organization and goes, hey, I'm changing the culture, sometimes it still leaves you with that feeling that I'm still the same place. So for Knox in particular, I would love to see the Spurs make a run for him. I would love that.
I mean, I was joking with you about, you know, always, it's not just you who does this. It's just like, if you're talking about a good player development system, the Spurs are the first team to come to mind. I mean, Miami too, Toronto as well. Like,
yeah,
all of those teams are good at turning reclamation projects into contributing pieces. But
well, yeah, now that I think about it, when was the last time the Spurs did this? It's been a while.
To take like a reclamation project and
really turned it into something.
Yeah, for a young guy. I mean, you could argue Rudy Gay to some extent, but he was much older when they got him.
Yeah, and he just like tore his Achilles and
yeah. And he was an established player. I'm not saying Rudy Gay and Kevin Knox are at the same parts of their career. Like, right. Rudy Gay was much better than where Kevin Knox was.
But current Rudy Gay, you know, post-Achilles Rudy Gay, obviously limited. You can see in his movement, he's not the same guy. But maybe that's actually not a bad archetype for Kevin Knox.
Yeah, I agree. So before we move on from the Knicks, Mort, we didn't do playoff predictions this year because we just ran out of time. But I would guess that if we did, neither one of us would have even put the Knicks in the play-in tournament heading into the year.
You would be accurate.
What do you think of them now? Do you think this is sustainable, that they are like no longer just, you know, you look at your schedule and you see the Knicks and you're like, that's a W?
Oh yeah, no, you're not there anymore, and that changed when they got Tibbs. I think I even said that when they hired Tibbs. I actually said, now you can no longer look at the Knicks and go, that's an automatic W. But they're still very short on talent. Like, they've been good, but let's not beat around the bush here. in terms of talent, they're still significantly short from being, mm-hmm. you know, a top-tier team. But that's always been the Tibbs thing. Like, he takes a team with, you know, that may not have a ton of talent, but he just makes the pieces fit. And I think he's doing that this year as well. So if a guy like Alec Burks comes back and is fully healthy, and Austin Rivers as well, well, then suddenly you have two scoring guards who can help, you know, contribute in that department, which might lower Julius Randle's on-ball responsibilities, and maybe mm-hmm. even R.J. Barrett's as well, making them a little bit more efficient. That would be huge. But no, I think they're not a pushover, but that doesn't necessarily make them an automatic playoff team. Could they be in the play-on tournament? Absolutely. Could they also be a sixth seed? I'm not putting it against them. It's weird times. But I put them in the same boat as the Magic, right? Like, they could miss the playoffs. They could be a 7th mm-hmm. seed. They could be 8th seed. They could even be the 6th seed, because this is just what Tibbs does.
Yeah. I mean, I guess in the sense of, like, this is a weird season. COVID could knock out a star for a couple weeks, and then that's going to send those teams down the standings. Look, any team could be in the top six with that logic.
Yeah. But,
you know, assuming relative health for most teams this year, I don't think the Knicks are going to be a top six seed. But, yeah, I'm with you. I think they're a legit threat for the play-in tournament. I mean, I think there are very few teams in the East that aren't at this point.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would just like to offer one thing, though. One team has been removed from the top six, so it has left a spot open.
Toronto, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, you still have Philly, Indiana, Boston, Milwaukee, Brooklyn. So, yeah, I guess there is one spot open for now.
Oh, I'm not a believer in Brooklyn yet. And while Indiana, and we'll get to Indiana. They're all such a weird team.
Miami's going to be up there. It, you know, I know they got off to a slow start because Butler was hurt, but they'll be in that top six mix as well.
Even if they're not, I'm not worried about Miami, like, at all.
No, me neither. All right, well, since we brought up the top six, and one of the teams that is in there for now, at least, is the Philadelphia 76ers. They're off to a league-best 7-2 start. Was 7-1 before the Road Sixers came back and lost to a Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, Spencer Dinwiddie-less Brooklyn Nets team last night.
Brian, I'm just going to go do my taxes because it's Philly. So you just got this, right? So I'll be back in like 45 minutes.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, okay. I mean, my projection would have been a lot rosier before last night. I'll say that much. They didn't really beat anyone good so far this year. I mean, Orlando was probably the best team they beat. But otherwise, two against Washington, two against Charlotte. They beat the Knicks. They beat Toronto, which, you know, going into the season would have looked a lot better than it does right now. They lost a game against the Cavs where Embiid didn't play. And then last night, they were coming off of back-to-back. Seth Curry was out. But it was still a pretty inexcusable loss given how many Nets players weren't there. I would have been a lot more optimistic about this team 24 hours ago, but after last night's game, we find out that Seth Curry has tested positive for COVID. So he is now going to be out an undetermined amount of time, but at least a week or two, I have to assume, and they're heading into a stretch. They have Denver Saturday, at Atlanta Monday, and two against Miami last week. So what do you think the absence of Seth Curry means for this team, and is it like, Are we talking about, you know, this Thursday is where the season just went off the rails for the Sixers?
No, I'm not there. I will say this. We might see periods where they revert back to being the Sixers of last year just because they don't have such a dynamic shot maker. I mean, mm-hmm. look, it's only outside of Seth, it's only Danny Green and Tobias Harris that are canning more than two triples a game. I think Harris is somewhat sustainable, even though I think his percentage is probably a little bit higher up than where it ends up. Danny Green, though, is, like, he's such a weird shooter. Like, he'll have these huge stretches, and he'll follow them up by just chonkers. And
yeah.
So I don't really consider him one of those reliable shooters on a game-to-game basis.
No,
meaning you need more shooting, and you need to find that from a different avenue. Is that Forkan Korkmaz? It could be. Is that Mike Scott? Maybe. He hasn't really shot the ball that well, but you know, hit 26%, that's not Mike Scott. Like, he can hit the three at a higher level.
But both of those guys are hurt, too.
Oh, Scott isn't back? I thought I saw a report saying he was back.
No, he missed last night, and Cork has a hip injury, I believe, so he's out.
Oh, yeah, no, I know he missed last night, but I thought he was back. I thought I saw a report that he's back for the next one.
Oh, Mike Scott is?
Yeah, I might have been wrong, but...
Yeah. Oh, I hope. I hope. Yeah. That'd be great. Yeah. I don't know. I know he's been out for the last few, and then, yeah, Cork has an adductor strain, so he's been out for at least a week. I don't know when he's expected back. They haven't given an update yet.
No, but I'm presuming he'll be back eventually. And like,
here's the
thing. We don't know. Seth Curry, like, we can say he's out for a week. Okay.
Right.
It could also be 2 weeks. It could also be 3 weeks because COVID is a bitch.
Yeah.
It can be, at the very least. So I'm just thinking long term, it wouldn't be bad to get Korkmaz, you know, when he comes back, getting him more shots, getting him more minutes, like giving him that opportunity. But I think the answer here is Shake Milton, right? I think it has to be. His 27.5% is laughable because that's not who he is. He's a much better shooter than that. So I don't put any stock into his current 3-point field goal percentage. What I want to see him being used as more is a non-ball handler. I've been on this for a long time. I don't think it's a good idea to turn him into a point guard. I think he's a guy you need to run off screens. I think you need to turn him into a scorer. I don't get the whole Kobe White experiment with Shake Milton. I really don't. I just want him to be a guy who unleashes like 10 threes a game because his release is so good. He's got great shot timing. It's a quick release as well. Like, just release that three ball at a much higher rate, and then maybe you can overcome the loss of Seth for a couple weeks.
Yeah, I mean, Shake did start in Seth's place last night, and he scored 24. I mean, I will say this about Shake. He isn't a natural point guard. I agree with you there. But his off-the-dribble game is just sensational. Like, he's taking at least two or three shots a game where he'll dribble into the paint. He's surrounded by three guys, and I'm like, there's no way he's getting this shot off. And then he does, and it goes in. It just shoots right over the trees, and they're not even like just normal jump shots. They're like herky jerky hook, like semi hook shots.
Right, he's a scorer.
Yeah, yeah, he has a lot of tricks in his bag that, you know, he's been putting on full display this year. And Doc had been talking him up in the preseason, so it's good to see that carry over. But look, I mean, Seth Curry, I'm with you. He's not shooting 60% from the field, almost 60 from three moving forward. But he has just been the release valve that they've been missing since J.J. Redick was there. But even, like, J.J. Redick didn't have everything that Seth Curry brings to the table. Like, they both are these, you know, elite catch-and-shoot threats. But when Seth catches the ball and a defender closes out, he's more capable of creating off the dribble than J.J. was. Like, J.J. would usually just pass out.
Right.
You know, if he catches it, a defender comes, JJ's just going to swing the ball back. Seth will either take one dribble to the side and shoot, or, you know, as the defender comes jumping at him, he will start dribbling toward the basket and then either go for, he's got a nice little off-the-glass layup, or he'll kick it out to the other side, and usually Danny Green's spotting up over there, Tobias Harris is spotting up over there. So I mean, last night's loss, I can explain in about three different ways. One, Curry was out. Two, the starters just didn't have it. They're coming off a back-to-back where they played a ton of minutes. And they just played. I mean, Doc Rivers said they were just, like, unfocused, which I think is fair to say. They just looked really sloppy in the first half anyway. But, you know, I'm worried going into this stretch that, like, Seth Curry has been really, really important to this team. And I'm just curious to see how they adjust without him.
Right.
But I will say this, though. Tobias Harris, coming off of the Eastern Conference Player of the Week award, Mort, this is the Tobias Harris that we were promised when he signed that $180 million contract.
I said over the course of the off season that there was a pathway where Tobias Harris could make himself less overpaid. Mm-hmm. Because everyone kind of pegged Harris as being just kind of Andrew Wiggins. Look, I saw a ton of Andrew Wiggins for Tobias Harris deals floating around,
yeah.
Which was just crazy to me. Like, Tobias Harris is actually good at playing basketball. And that has gotten completely forgotten after he signed his contract. Like, he is a legitimately good player. Yes. Is he overpaid? Yes. Is he dramatically overpaid? Sometimes, yes.
Yes.
Sometimes, yes. Sometimes, yes. Absolutely. But we're still looking at a guy who is capable of putting up 20-8 and doing so with, actually, this year, much better defense. But he was never a defensive liability. He's also a guy who's always been willing to move the ball. Like, a good three-point shooter, a good free-throw shooter. So, not a liability whatsoever. Yeah, so I think there's been some progress made in him closing that gap between just how much overpaid he is compared to the perception of how overpaid he is. Like, he's a good player. He's, like, let's be honest here. Right now, he's an all-star candidate.
Yeah, I mean, based on the first couple weeks of the season, I agree. Right. And I think it's a good way to frame it. It's not... He's never going to return positive value on a $180 million contract.
Correct.
Because he is the poster boy for this is why you shouldn't give max or near max contracts to guys whose ceiling is probably fringe all-star. But you're right. He's moving toward, like, this isn't, like, over the summer, over the offseason, you know, everyone's compiling, like, worst contracts in the NBA list, and he was near the top of every one. He might not be near the top of everyone. Like, maybe he'll move down that list a little bit. Like, he's still always going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, Doc, you know, going into the season was saying, we just want him to get back to being a quick decision player, which is what he was when Doc had him in L.A. And I think we've seen that. Like, Tobias just looks more confident in what he's doing. And he's, you know, he's not over-dribbling. He's pulling up into these mid-range twos, but he's, like, not overthinking it. It just looks clean and more natural for him. So I've been encouraged by his start. Joel Embiid is off to an MVP start as well. I mean, he's even...
Well, can we just wrap up Harris? Can we?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I have another point here. I just want to wrap this up. I think it's really important as well, because when we talk about perception of him, would you agree with me if I say that the vast majority of NBA fans and observers probably doesn't have a good grasp of who Tobias Harris is as a player? Because when he started his career, he played for an awful Milwaukee squad. Then he moved on to an extremely irrelevant Orlando Magic organization.
Yep.
Followed that up by going to an even more irrelevant NBA organization with the Pistons. And then he ended up with the Clippers during a time where they didn't have Kawhi and Paul George, and works under the spotlight. So essentially, the first time he really got national attention was when he became a Sixer, which was very recently. So I think with him, there's that whole, you know, WTF is that guy aspect of it. Like, a lot of pundits and observers who have followed the league closely, yeah, they know. But average NBA fans who make up the most clicks on those overpaid lists, like, they have most of them watched him play more than five times? I doubt it.
Yeah.
I truly doubt it. Well,
I mean, I don't think Harris deserved the level of slander that he got last year.
Right.
But you're never going to remove him from that contract and what that means team building wise for the Sixers moving forward, unfortunately. And
that's
the risk of being overpaid to that extent. But yeah, he was not a bad player last year. Anyone who was saying he was a bad player was overreacting.
Right.
He's better this year. Like, I don't think that is arguable. And, you know, hopefully he can continue playing this confidently, because that's what the Sixers need out of him. Like, this is what he's looking more like, the guy they were willing to give that kind of money to. Whereas last year, I mean, you know, we've beaten that horse into the ground at this point. But yeah, last year's team just didn't fit. This year's team is fitting much better. And, you know, again, Embiid, I think, is shouldering a large part of that as well. He looks motivated, in shape. The lineup fits better around him, but he's also, you know, his passing out of double teams in particular has been vastly improved this year. And he was saying, like, he fell back in love with passing because now he has guys who can actually knock down shots. It was frustrating last year. I get it. You know,
shots fired at Ben Simmons, though, but okay.
You know, yeah, well, no, I think it's more shots fired at Josh Richardson than Al Horford. I mean, he was saying, like, it was frustrating to watch. He'd get double teamed, he'd pass out, they'd miss an open shot, and then he started feeling like he had to do everything himself. Now, you know, again, he's developing some good chemistry, especially with Seth Curry. We'll see what happens in his absence. But he looks just more confident in what he's doing as well. There are still stretches where he takes frustrating shots, but I'll give him this. He started the Wizards game the other night. Just, I think he was 0-6 in the first quarter, and it looked like it was just one of those games where nothing was going right for him. And he ended it with like 38 points, 8 rebounds, I think 3 or 4 blocks, 3 or 4 steals. Like, he got himself back into that game. It really seems like Doc Rivers has gotten through to him in a way that toward the end of his tenure, Brett Brown could not.
Right. I have a few thoughts here on Embiid. One is, if only he was as good as Nikola Jokic.
Well, I'm so mad that Curry's hurt, because that's game Saturday was going to be a real litmus test for this team.
Uh-huh. Yeah, sure, Brian. No, I'm kidding. It would have been. It's a damn shame. So what I have a slight problem with some of Embiid's shot selection still. Or not. Rather, I think some of his recent high efficiency might be a little bit of fool's gold, because right now he is hitting 62.5% from beyond 16 feet on his mid-range jump shots, which makes up, you know, 13.5% of his offense. That is not sustainable for a guy like him, who's over the past 2 years has shot 35% from that area. Like, you don't see an almost 30% increase that way. You just don't, and it's not. I don't think it's sustainable. So I think if he should plummet down efficiency-wise, he still needs to take better shots. Like, okay, we've talked about this so many times before, but I'm still going to hit that bell. When you're 7'2", and you're 270 pounds, and you are so muscled as he is, you should take more than 23% of your shots near the basket, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's not. And that's the problem I have. Well, actually, that's a lie. He's actually taking 23.3%, but that is still about 20 percentage points too low for me. Like, sometimes I still think he would benefit from going a little bit more shaky.
Hmm.
And I'm concerned, like, in 20 games, if that mid-ranger stops falling.
Yeah, yeah.
That he just ends up the same old Embiid.
It was not falling against the Nets last night, and he looked out of sorts. Again, could just be fatigue, but...
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even want to ask the question about whether they're for real, because they've beaten really... I mean, Orlando and New York, given their hot starts, is great, but, like, they've beaten really no one of substance. And with Curry out, I don't know how much we're going to learn about their ceiling. I think we'll learn a lot more about their floor than their ceiling over the next week or so. But with a fully healthy team, Mort, did this start change your perception of them, or are you still in wait-and-see mode?
I have a leg in both camps. I am definitely way more intrigued, and I think they have a much better bench, and I think the roster as a whole is a lot better this year than it was last year. I think there's more cohesiveness, and that matters. But yes, it's still the Sixers.
Yeah.
So I need to see more. I would feel much more at ease if, instead of having played, is it 9 games? 8 or 9 games?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That would have been set 35, and they would still had the same winning percentage. I need to see them in a couple months and then reevaluate. I'm high on them, but they fooled me before, and yeah. they fooled you before. They fooled everyone before. And I'm just not ready to go, oh, a 9-game sample size, that's fine. Like, no, I'm not there. I need to see more.
I'm right with you. I'm completely, again, that is why I'm especially bummed that Curry's going to be out for this next stretch, because this was really one of their best prove-it yeah. opportunities of this first half of the season. They have another tough stretch against a lot of Western teams, I think later in February. But, yeah, this sucks, and I think the wheels are about to come off a little bit. Not to say they won't bounce back from it, but I don't think they're in the Milwaukee, Boston. I would put Brooklyn above them right now. You know, could they get there? Maybe, but right. I'm not there yet.
You know. While we've been chatting, Brian, something has happened. So there seems to be some issues in Atlanta. This is a report from Chris Kirshner and Sam Amick of The Athletic, and Trae Young's listless performance Wednesday night raised eyebrows. What preceded that was John Collins expressing frustration with his role and Young at the helm during a Hawks film session. Collins did say, "Trae's my brother regardless." So, like, okay, there's still that bond, but the on-court thing, that is not something I anticipated. Like, the Hawks was one of those teams that we just expected would take over, and they're 4-4. So, like, they should have been on this list, actually, the one that we're talking about today, and they aren't, and that might play a part.
Huh. Well, to be fair to them, Danilo Gallinari has been out for most of the season so far, and that was one of their big pickups. But the Hawks, I wanted them to be on this list. I wanted to be able to talk about them, but Bogdan Bogdanovic has not done a ton either. I mean, I will say DeAndre Hunter has been a very pleasant surprise offensively.
Yeah, yes.
Wow, that's interesting. This was always the concern, I feel like, about their off-season signings. And this is why, you know, I put them number one on my league pass rankings, in part because I just thought their offense was going to be super fun to watch, and it has been. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I kept harping on they have almost too many mouths to feed, and especially with the Gallo signing, with Collins heading into a contract year, the message that might send to him, there was a potential for some real locker room tension to start to bubble over. I just wouldn't have expected it this early.
I'm going to push back a little on what you said, because in terms of having too many mouths to feed, if that's the case, then you don't play Solomon Hill 17 minutes per game in all 8 of your games.
that's fair.
Like, he should be out of the rotation entirely. He shouldn't have played. This is even with Gallo out. Like, Collins is averaging 28 minutes a game. Cam Reddish, 28 minutes a game. Kevin Herter, 27. Clint Capella, 26. Bojan Bogdanovic, Bogdan Bogdanovic, rather, 25. Like, plenty of minutes to be given if you just spread Solomon Hill's minutes out to those guys. Plenty.
Mm-hmm.
So I get what you're saying, but I can never take that statement serious if Solomon Hill is getting rotational minutes.
That's fair. I mean, again, I think part of it is the absence of, like, I don't think Solomon Hill's getting those minutes if Gallo's healthy. Or not as many minutes, at least. So I think
he shouldn't be getting any minutes at all. It's Solomon Hill on that roster with those players ahead of him. I don't care. Like, then spread out those 17 minutes onto 1, 2, 3, 4 players. It's fine. You can make do.
Yeah, well, now reading this Amick report, it sounds like it's less of a issue with Collins' minutes in particular, or maybe it is, and it's not covered in this report, but they're saying he talked about the need to get into offensive sets more quickly and to limit all of those early shot clock attempts that leave his teammates on the outside looking in. He shared his desire to be more involved and expressed a desire for more ball involvement and flow on offense. Wow.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah, that is not great.
No.
Well, I mean, look, we said when he didn't get the extension that he's a trade target.
Yeah.
I don't think this changes that.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah.
So they're saying, even after the film session, the dialogue about how these Hawks should operate continued, only this time it was Clint Capella who decided to weigh in during a private discussion with Young. Capella had seen a similar act unfold before the Dwight Howard, James Harden era with the Rockets. Capella's message focused on that cautionary tale, how Howard's demands for the ball, along with Harden's reluctance to give it up more freely, widened the divide between them and led to collective failure. Ooh, buddy.
Yep.
That is not good.
No, that is not what I anticipated this year from the Hawks.
Huh. Well, that sucks. I guess maybe I'll switch the Hawks and the Knicks in my league pass rankings. Yeah, they're saying sources within the team and close to the situation pointed to his recent contract negotiations as a possible explanation for his frustration, although there appears to be genuine interest or intent for Collins to see this team continue to progress as a contender.
Yeah.
Damn.
And for Pierce's part, and yeah, for Lloyd Pierce and Trae Young, like, they're... So we heard a little bit of buzz last year about those two not getting along. This is also outlined.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If that doesn't improve, then what?
I don't know. Man.
They're suddenly... Yeah, we just completely went off topic, but this is a pretty big story.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me, especially given the expectations this Hawks team had coming into the season, if Lloyd Pierce ends up being on the hot seat this year.
Yeah. That's a shame, though.
I agree. I mean, this is, you know, that's part of the danger of taking over a rebuilding team, is oftentimes the person who starts the job isn't the one who finishes the job. I think Brett Brown was kind of the exception to the rule in Philly, where he got a chance to survive the process years and, you know, kind of oversee that next step. But we even saw with him this past year that, you know, now they fired him and brought in Doc Rivers. So it would not surprise me, whether it's this year or, you know, next year maybe, if Lloyd Pierce ends up getting the boot for a more established coach. Yeah. But, oof. All right, well, that is a huge bummer.
Yeah.
All right, let's go back into teams that are not disappointing yet. The Indiana Pacers.
Yeah.
Indiana Pacers are 6-2. Their only two losses came against Boston and New York. They've beaten the Knicks, Bulls, Celtics, Cavs, Pelicans, and Rockets. More, I mean, what do you think of them the first year under Nate Bjorkgren?
Yeah.
Is that how you...
Yeah.
Okay.
You're close enough. Let's just put it that way.
Okay. All right, cool. What do you think of them in this new system?
Yeah, no, it's been interesting. I'm a little bit bummed out that C.J. Warren is down and out.
Yeah.
He's missed half the season. So half the season. He's missed four games. Four out of eight.
Well, he's...
But he's
out. He's going to miss most of the season, if not all.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that is... God, that is just such a huge problem, because he's one of the most insanely, weirdly efficient shot makers in the NBA when it comes to just contorting and finishing layups and whatnot. Like, not having that versatile a scoring presence, where do you get it from? Like, both Brogdon and Oladipo, and even Sabonis as well, all the three top scorers, is it fair to say that they're a bit mechanical?
How so?
Just in terms of, like, body flexibility and not being able to, like, manufacture crazy shots. Like, Oladipo, I think, is...
Oh, I see,
yeah. Unlike Warren, of course, who just has that ability to go off by, you know, he can have one of those 30-point nights where he sidesteps and he goes to the hole a couple times, like, double clutches, layups. Like, he can just create something out of nothing. That's kind of what I'm alluding to. Whereas Brogdon, Sabonis, and then Oladipo, I don't know if that if that holds true for them, which means if they are a pretty mechanical team, it also makes them a bit predictable. That could probably worry me moving forward. But, you know, let's cross that bridge when we get there. So far, they've been good. I mean, we're seeing Miles Turner becoming the defensive player that we've been waiting for. He was always mm-hmm. good defensively, but right now he's like a DPOY candidate. Offensively, he's still as frustrating as ever, but I'm okay with this because he's leading.
It's not going to happen.
It's not.
It's just not going to happen offensively, and that's okay. Like, I've made peace with it because of, as you said, he's so good defensively. 4.1 blocks and 1.6 steals per game in only 29.3 minutes.
It's insane. It's absolutely insane. Like, what he's doing defensively, it just makes up for it, and I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I wonder just how they are going to look in a month, because this could be like an early season success. They could be building off, you know, TJ's success over the first four games, and then the loss of him could also be like, you know, one of those moments where they just, okay, let's get this for TJ, and then when that wears out, then what? So they seem pretty top heavy, and I wonder where they're going to get additional production. Like, so Doug McDermott is coming off the bench, Justin Holliday is coming off the bench, but those are guys that you need to set up a lot. Like, those aren't guys that you give the ball to and say, go get us a shot.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking towards, like, what is their next step in all this?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they could be a great regular season team, but then is their ceiling in the playoffs limited? That kind of thing?
Yeah, exactly. Because you just need to have versatile shot making. You need to have playmaking as well coming out of anyone. Like, Aaron Holiday, I think, is not there. I know Pacers fans mm-hmm. are pretty high on him, and I do see that, you know, the upside when he plays well, but when he doesn't play well, it's just a different world. So I think, they need some more stability at their depth, especially from the guards. And this is where, honestly, this is where they really miss like a fully healthy Jeremy Lamb, right? Like,
yeah, that definitely.
That would be such a boon for this team, but I don't even know when he's, like, I think the word is, was it early February?
In terms of when he's coming back?
Yeah.
They say mid to late January, according to a report from the Indianapolis
Star. Oh, so that's actually sooner. Okay.
Yeah. So that actually would be, that'll help stem the bleeding at least.
Yeah, it would. And then they would actually have three wings that could create some havoc. But still, I mean, even Jeremy Lamb is not an on-ball creator. So
Right.
I don't know if that problem gets solved unless they just give more minutes to TJ McConnell and tells him, you know what, it doesn't matter if you only take one shot per game. Just get the ball to Doug and to Jeremy and to Justin Holiday, and then just go to work. Maybe that's the play. But yeah, offensively, I'm not fully buying into what they're doing. Defensively, though, I mean, it's hard to look at this squad and say they're going to get, you know, going to be bad defensively. Because they have so many weapons. Like, Malcolm Brogdon is just a rock-solid defender. Victor Oladipo, the same thing. We just covered Turner. Justin Holiday off the bench, strong defender. T.J. McConnell is pesky. I don't know if I would categorize him as a fundamentally sound defender, but he is one of the most annoying players to go up against. That matters. And hell, flying under the radar, I mean, we have games where Ducky McBuckets even sometimes, like, puts in a valiant defensive effort, which, that's a boon, right there. But offensively is probably where I have the most question marks.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I think they seem to fit together well, and everyone has really seemed to buy into their roles, you know, especially now coming off of what we just talked about with the Hawks. I don't think we're going to hear these stories coming out about the Pacers this year.
Right.
I hope not. But so far, at least, it just seems like they've all kind of, like, okay, Brogdon, Sabonis, Oladipo are going to be our offensive engines. Miles Turner is going to set the tone defensively. And as you said, you know, McConnell is annoying as hell on the ball as well. Brogdon is leading the team in shot attempts right now, and he's just been hyper efficient doing so as usual. He's, you know, threatening to be in the 50-40-90 club. Oladipo, I think, I don't want to say he's back because it's, you know, he's only played 7 games so far, but
it looks good.
I'm pretty optimistic based on, you know, when he came back last year, you could tell he was still just not really his former self. This year, he's looking a lot closer, at least. Yeah.
No, I agree. And also, you know, it sounds like I'm down on the Pacers when I complain about their offense. I will just say this. They've lost 2 games. 1 by 5, the other by 4. So collectively, their losses have just accumulated 9 points, which is crazy. Like, that is... that means they're in games, like, they've won 2 tight ones as well. Like, that matters. What I wonder is basically the playoffs and, like, when against elite, elite teams, can they overcome those challenges? But you know what? So far, I think they've earned the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, yeah, you're wondering, do they have, like, the individual shot creation talent that you'll need in the playoffs, basically?
Right. And as well as both from the starting lineup but from the bench. So you could argue Brogdon or Oladipo can create a bunch. The thing is, and I think you agree with me on this, Oladipo's 3-point shot can also go very hot and cold.
Yeah.
So that's one avenue.
Yeah, he's shooting 41.2% from 3 right now. I would love to see that hold, but he had never shot above 37.1 in a season before this, so I think it is fair to expect that to dip down a bit as the season goes on. We're still very much operating in small sample sizes here.
Right. Like, Malcolm Brogdon, I think it's just so steady. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if he remains where he is at. And also, by the way, why aren't we even talking about Brogdon? We really should. He's averaging almost 24 points a game.
Yeah, he's phenomenal. Yeah. He's been such a good fit last year too when Oladipo was out, but like he's based on what they needed in that role, knowing you have a guy like Oladipo who likes to operate on the ball more, so you need a secondary ball handler, a secondary playmaker who can, when Oladipo is out, be more of the primary guy, but otherwise just, you know, operate in this hyper efficient complimentary role. He's perfect. Yeah. Every team needs a guy like Malcolm Brogdon.
Yeah, I would agree.
And Sabonis has been phenomenal too.
He has. You know where Brogdon would look really good right now? Milwaukee. Isn't that fun?
If they had, replace him in the start, replace Dante DiVincenzo in the starting lineup with Malcolm Brogdon, and you can roll out Drew, Brogdon, Chris Middleton, Giannis, Brooke Lopez. Good night. Yeah,
exactly. No, but Sabonis is, you're right. And he started taking threes at a higher rate, which I love.
Yep.
He's getting more involved in the offense. Like, he's becoming, like I said, you know, the lesser Jokic in that sense.
Yeah.
Still not a guy who'll pick the ball up full court, you know, 70 times a game like Jokic. But he's right there, especially in half-court sets and half-court passings. He's been great. Defensively is where I struggle a little bit with him. But you know what? I don't actually mind, because when you have Miles Turner blocking 4 shots, when he's flanked by Oladipo and Brogdon and Justin Holiday as well, you know, it's okay. I can live with that. It's fine. But no, I don't know why, but I'm just not quite sold on them yet, even though they've given me no reason to actually have that feeling.
That's fair. I mean, again, I think it's fair to question whether they have the type of talent that tends to win out in the playoffs. But I also think this is going to be a great regular season team for sure. Yeah. And, you know, I think they're going to be pretty solidly in that one of the top 6 spots wherever they land. I'm not 100% sure, but I don't think they're going to be in the play-in tournament. Like, I think they're going to be locked into the playoffs by the end of this year. Again, assuming health. With the caveat, just always assume.
Assuming health. At this point. That's right. Yeah. No, you might be right. I might be a little bit too skeptical of them. The versatile shot-making is something that I'm slightly concerned about, because I do think if you if you just don't have a lot of creativity, that could hurt you. And T.J. Warren just had, it has tons of it. Like he makes up things as he goes, and sometimes that can be a problem, and sometimes it can be one of the most devastating weapons. And I want to see one of those guys on the roster just try to break out a little bit more. Not in terms of statistically, because you could argue that's what Brockton is doing right now, but I want to see some more creative offensive efficiency that way. I just want to see someone get weird.
Yeah. And maybe Jeremy Lamb will be the hope there.
Yeah, but, and that's a question as well. Like, if he's healthy, like how does his body hold up when he comes back? Because that was not easy.
No, and that's, I mean, I think it'd be a similar situation to Oladipo last year, where I would not expect full strength Jeremy Lamb right off the bat. But his return will be a big deal for this team. But
I would love to see them healthy, though. Like, haven't you had that feeling that that this team just hasn't been healthy at the same time? They're always like a major piece away, and like they always have to compensate. What I would love to see this entire roster healthy, like Jeremy Lamb, T.J. Warren, Victor Oladipo, like all of them at full health and going strong. Then I think I would trust them a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's been that. I think Nate McMillan was even saying that before he got fired last year, was like, just give me a chance with a fully healthy team. And the Pacers were like, well, we don't know that we're ever going to have a fully healthy team. Bye.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah, no, that's harsh. But what they're doing with what they have, I find very impressive.
Agreed. So let's wrap up more with the Phoenix Suns, who I don't want to call them a surprise, because I think we expected them to take this kind of a leap. But, you know, there have been a lot of teams that make big offseason additions. Look at last year's Sixers, where everyone thought they'd be really good, and they just were mediocre the whole year. The Phoenix Suns, not the case. They've gotten off to a great start, 6-2. They're tied with the... No, they're a half game ahead. They're atop the Western Conference right now. Wins over Dallas, Sacramento, New Orleans, Utah, Denver, Toronto. So these aren't cupcakes they're beating up. They, you know, their two losses. They had 3-point loss against Sacramento on the road, 5-point loss to the Clippers. And that was a game where they were down, I think, 31, if I remember correctly, and they came back to actually make it a game. So what are you seeing out of this Suns team so far?
Well, Cameron Payne is obviously point guard of the future.
He has been good.
He's been really good. 8 points, 4.5 assists per game in just 18 minutes. You know, stroking the three ball, getting into the teeth of the defense. He's been good. Cameron Johnson has delivered. Mikal Bridges has delivered. Jay Crowder has delivered. I think the trio of wings, just having that versatility, all of them being plus defenders, all of them being plus shooters, it's just allowed Chris Paul and Devin Booker to just handle the vast majority of the offense. And even Aiden, like, I was expecting Aiden to have one of those years where, you know, he just tore through the league, like 25 and 12 or something like that. He's just kind of scaled back, but not in a bad way. If you catch where it drifts, like statistically, it looks like he's really declined, but his game hasn't. If that makes sense, like he's a smarter player, it's like smarter defender. He focuses a lot more on opportunistic scoring. It's just he's playing a pretty smart brand of basketball, I think.
Yeah, I mean, like Booker and Paul statistically have not gotten off to especially good starts.
Right.
And I think that is a testament to the depth of this Suns team. Like, as you said, Mikal Bridges especially has taken a huge step forward offensively this year. Yeah. He's going to be my new trigger word. Like, anytime I hear his name, I'm just going to get mad. Because, I mean, every team could use a guy like him, and he's going to get just massively paid on his next deal. Mm-hmm. I don't know that he's going to be a max guy, but he's looking at that OG extension. And he's like, that's my floor right now.
Yeah. No, I actually think that's fair. I think for him, it's not just the shooting, right? Because it felt like when he was at Villanova that shot would just come. It always weirded me out. Like it seems like the Suns broke down his shot first, because then he had the hitch that was way more explicit in Phoenix than it was at Villanova. I think they almost decided to go, you know what, this is like a 2 or 3 year project with his shot. Like it's good, but we want to get it great. And right now, that shot looks so fluid. And it's not just the three ball. Dude is hitting 95, almost 95% from the free throw line. Like he's missed one free throw, and everything just looks like it's the confidence level, and whenever he shoots, and it's the no hesitation, it's the no twitch or whatever it is. I'm going to ask it. I didn't want to go this route, but you know, I'm going to ask this question. Is he their MVP this year so far?
Can I say MIP instead? Is that a cop out?
No, yeah, it is. I'm actually going to ask you. Has he been their MVP?
I don't think he's been their MVP. Okay. I think he has clearly been their MIP.
Yeah, but that goes without saying.
Yeah. And not only has he been their MIP, but I think will he get consideration for MIP? Probably not, because he has so many other guys putting up big numbers, and I think it's going to limit what he does. Yeah. But he should get MIP consideration if he keeps his
Well, up. He's the 10th overall pick, so he's a lottery pick. So, unfortunately, no can
yeah,
do. No can do, Brian.
Third year. Third year.
But the one doesn't overrule the other, Brian. It has to be both.
But fair enough. No, I mean, I think it's still, even though Booker and Paul are not, you know, Booker's not putting up 30 points a game and Paul's not averaging like 18 and 10 like his prime self, I think they are just managing the offense. Mm. So I think everything is still running through them, even though these other guys, these complimentary guys, are really stepping up. I mean, you could argue Jay Crowder has been their MVP this year. Like, he's been everything they needed in that spot.
Can you? He has.
Probably not.
Right. Because I agree with you that he's been everything they needed in that spot. But look, Mikal Bridges is the better defender. And like Jay Crowder is a good defender. Mikal Bridges is a great defender.
Yeah.
Jay Crowder this year has been a very, very good shooter. Mikal Bridges has been a great shooter. Like,
can I amend it?
Yeah.
To say Jay Crowder has been the best signing of the summer.
Yeah, he's the
offseason.
Yeah, he's the best new arrival that was signed and not traded for. Yes.
And I mean, I would have to really go back and think, but I'm talking about league wide here.
Oh.
See, not count like Anthony Davis, not counting guys who re-signed. I'm talking about guys who signed elsewhere.
See, now you're catching me off guard, because I have not, like, that's a filter that my brain has not yet to apply.
Yeah.
To the entire
And I might be forgetting someone obvious too. So I say that with a grain of salt, but he's certainly in that conversation. Oh, well, he did have a great game on Wednesday. What a coincidence.
See, I've been avoiding saying anything of that sort on this podcast, but you go right ahead. You go right ahead. I am applauding what you just said there. Okay. Yep.
I mean, Jeremy Grant has been very, very good in Detroit as well. Yeah. So, but you know, it's not translating into wins yet. Like, Jay Crowder has been just such an impactful addition to this team.
Right.
That maybe I shouldn't say. Well, no. I mean, like, in terms of bang for the buck. Because they got him at a very reasonable price.
Well, now you're
price.
Flipping, like, the circumstances of what you said. What about this? Has he been the most influential role player getting signed this year?
I would assume so. I'm going to go back and look at... Yeah, I'm pulling up Spotrac here.
Of course
here
you
see.
Are, because this podcast is not an hour and 20 already.
I mean... Looking at, like, Bogdanović, Gallinari aren't there. Right. Jeremy Grant. Christian Wood.
Yeah.
All right, he's second behind Christian
Wood. Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair.
But either way, he's been phenomenal this year. And One thing on Ayton, because I was listening to the Zach Lowe and Richard Jefferson pod the other day while I was building a bookshelf that snapped in half.
That was random. Yeah, okay.
I'm still mad about it. Richard Jefferson was saying he actually hates what the Suns are doing with DeAndre Ayton. Yeah. He was saying, like, they're not... You know, he was hedging because he's like, I don't want him to just, like, post up 50 times a game and be Shaq, but, like, they're not challenging him was kind of the vibe I was getting. Like, he was basically saying they should be asking him to diversify his skill set more than they are.
Okay.
I was curious about your take on that because, like you, I've been pretty high on what I'm seeing from Ayton so far.
That's interesting. I usually listen to the low post. I haven't got a chance to listen to the Richard Jefferson one yet. Let me just wrap my head around that because I understand what he's saying, but at the same time, you know, this is an organization that's been through a lot in terms of adversity. So maybe now when they're winning, just let him get acclimated to that feeling before you throw the kitchen sink at him in terms of responsibility. Is mm-hmm. my take. Yeah, but I understand where he's coming from. Like, in the bubble, he was seeing so many different shots, right? Like, he got threes, he got drives. He was given a wide responsibility in just putting the ball in the basket. And I think we all expected him to continue to do so this year, and so far he's been more opportunistic. But isn't that a key in and of itself? Isn't that a teachable moment? Like, just being opportunistic. When you look at Rashawn Holmes, I just did a big Twitter thread on him. Granted, it was in Danish, but it should have the translate button. Like, that's a guy who isn't given, like, a huge role, but it's, like, a superstar in the role that he has. And I think for Ayton, mm-hmm. why not diversify in the sense that, okay, you don't need to be force-fed the ball 16 times a game. You don't need to go out and take 5 threes per game. Right now, just learn how to play opportunistic basketball, and then maybe in a couple weeks or in a month or two, when we feel we're pretty settled on our track towards the playoffs, then maybe we'll start giving you more post-ups. Maybe we'll give you the ball at the elbow and have you pass. Maybe we're going to give you this and this and that. It doesn't have to happen all at once, I'm thinking. Like, there are benefits in playing opportunistic basketball and learning off of that, because that is going to make you so much better at understanding when can I attack the rim. Well, oh, okay, we have, like, Devin Booker is going in for a layup right now. Instead of going in too early and actually adding a defender to his driving lane, I'm going to scale it back. And if he finds me, I have an open jump shot, or I wait for the exact right moment and then I'll just, you know, dive and he'll find me off the cut. Like, there are so many things you can learn from playing opportunistic basketball, and if you have the pieces around you that can actually sustain winning and can sustain them offensively where you are not quote-unquote needed, then you can learn from that as well. I just don't see the problem here. I understand if this is like the new thing they're doing with Ayton and they have long-term aspirations of just making him like a Rashawn Holmes clone, because he shouldn't be that, but no, I don't have a problem with what they're doing right now. If they keep doing it, mm-hmm. then I will.
Yeah. No, I'm right with you. Like, I'm not... If anything, I'm even more encouraged that guys like Booker and Ayton, who had such big roles on a bad team last year, are willing to take a step back and say, we're willing to defer because we don't care about our stats, we just want to win. Right. Like, that, you know, they're not... It doesn't seem like they're... I don't think we're going to get chirping from the Suns like we did from the Hawks as well, where it's like, I mean, maybe if they go on a losing streak, then we start to hear it, but you know, I think it's all good vibes with the Suns team, and I'm, in retrospect, like, I thought they would be a solid playoff team, but I thought they would be play-in rather than top six. I'm pretty ready to anoint them as the top six team in the West.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see why not.
Yeah. I don't think they're falling back. The depth is more impressive than I gave them credit for.
Right.
And I think this, they have a decade long playoff list streak. I think that snaps this year. And I think they're going to be annoying to play in the playoffs. I would not be psyched. You know, if they run into the Clippers or the Lakers in the first round, that's not ideal. But any other team, I think they'd have a legit right. shot to beat.
Yeah. No, I agree. Man, even the Clippers, though, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my God. Can you imagine Chris Paul against the Clippers in the playoffs? Oh, I know it's not the same team, not the same coach.
No, but Twitter would have a meltdown.
Yeah, all right. Well, now we know what to root for in a couple months. But I think that is a good place for us to wrap up. So thank you all, as always, for listening in. Please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We are being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And thank you to listening to our live show on Locker Room. If you liked our show, please be sure to start your own room and engage with other fans on the app. Download the Locker Room app in the Apple App Store to be a part of our podcast. Also, a reminder, we are being supported by Manscaped. So get 20% off and free shipping with the code NBAPOD at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code NBAPOD. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, man. Don't die.